paper forms, months of waiting, counselors to help you figure out what's yours. It seems like the process of retiring from the federal government is stuck in a time warp. This for people retiring into a world of self-driving cars, internet mind melds, and blockchain-powered trust relationships. Here with her thoughts on what you should be doing, retirement planning expert Tammy Flanagan. And Tammy, you seem to be lamenting these days over how old-fashioned the OPM process still remains for getting people into that retirement mode.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. I'm just trying to face reality of the fact that we're living in a world that's changing at warp speed, but yet we're still processing retirement applications like it's 1920. So I'm wondering, you know, what the future does hold for federal retirement and retirement benefits in the not too distant future.
Well, now there is a recent report out from the one group of Republicans, the conservative type of caucus that got together, and it's not all Republicans, but it's a particular group, and they are talking openly about much higher premiums for federal health care, a cutback in retirement benefits through increased contributions, and so on. And this idea keeps recurring.
We hear all kinds of proposals in Congress, and luckily, most of them don't actually become law. Because even in the president's budget, there are some proposals that we heard last year, they were reintroduced this year, that would change things for current employees, such as increasing their retirement contribution, changing the cost of living adjustment that retirees receive, changing health benefit structure of premiums. So we're hoping those changes don't take effect. My experience has been over the past 30 years of studying this, that many of those proposals to erode the benefits or reduce the benefit coverage, like you said, are generally grandfathered in for new hires or for employees who don't know the difference yet that can plan their career around those changes. But I have noticed that there are changes that are made sometimes that are actually improvements, such as last year we had the TSP Modernization Act passed into law, which is now allowing the TSP to incorporate some changes to make withdrawing your TSP account much more flexible, and maybe even encouraging people to leave their money in the thrift rather than moving it into the unknown world of the private sector investment, where you might get snagged with high commissions or fees or even surrender charges if you want to take your money out early. So I think we're seeing some positive movement in Congress, even though a lot of that news is negative as far as the proposals go.
And with respect to the process of retiring, the paperwork, what are you hearing these days? I mean, OPM publishes every month how many it got, how many it processed, what the backlog is, and it goes up a little bit, down a little bit, but basically people still seem to wait for months.
Right. It's same old, same old. I've been doing this since 1985, and I really haven't seen a big change or shift in the way the processing occurs. Unfortunately, it's still a paper-based system. When a federal employee retires, they fill out a form. The agency has to put together a FedEx package of paperwork that has to be delivered to OPM. The Office of Personnel Management then sits down and goes page by page through the documentation, computing the final benefit calculation, making sure all of the past service is documented and creditable for retirement. So it's a very tedious paper-based process that sometimes will take months to get through. The good news, and I guess the thing that has changed, is that when an employee first retires, they're automatically placed into an interim retired status, meaning they're going to start getting payments from OPM once a month, even if their claim has not been finalized, where in the past, you used to have to wait 2 months or 3 months, however long it took them to get any money. So at least most retirees go into this interim status. The only exception would be if there was a question as to their eligibility for retirement.
We're speaking with Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefits Director at the National Institute of Transition Planning. And perhaps the problem is not really OPM alone, but the fact that because so many people tend to work at several agencies, sometimes maybe as many as a dozen different posts throughout their federal career, they don't have a single record in one place that's easy to tap. You might have to do some, I think OPM has to do archaeology through maybe many, many systems to find out what the start and end dates and salaries and all of this were for each of those positions.
You've hit the nail on the head, I think, Tom, because that is one of the primary causes for delay: missing records, service history that's not been adequately documented. The agency's responsibility is really to gather together that information, the employee's responsibility is to make sure that all of their records from their past career, you know, if they worked for five different agencies, if they served in the military, it's your responsibility as an employee to make sure those records have followed you to your current appointment, so that when your agency puts together those records, they can have a complete package that goes to OPM. So I always wish I could talk to employees when they're first brought on board to let them know how important it is for them to assume that responsibility, because they're the ones who really care that they can retire on time and that they get the retirement benefit that they've earned.
Although if the retirement annuity itself is based on your last 3 years of employment of salary, that's pretty easy to verify, which means they know the amount you're going to get is the time they spend processing all of this, making sure that your history is accurate, just so that they know there was no interruption or whatever that might affect that final annuity, given that you have those 3 years that are just happened.
Right. Yeah. The salary is part of the equation. So you do have to look at your salary over the highest 3 years, which, as you said, is generally the final 3 years. So that's usually not where the problem exists. But when you multiply your salary times your length of service times the percentage you're going to get, if your length of service has only been documented at 28 years instead of the 35 years you actually worked, that's going to cause a difference in the calculation. So the length of service is really a critical factor, and it has to be accurately accounted for. And in some cases, employees have to pay into the retirement system for types of service such as military service or maybe seasonal work or summer jobs they did way back, you know, in high school or college years. So sometimes there's even a payment required in order to make that service creditable.
And switching to the more philosophic gear here, reading your most recent writings, you're musing, as we began with, that the world is changing a lot, and people that are retiring are changing into a world that is still moving. And it's going to look very different technologically and socially, even in the next couple of years, perhaps, than it looks now. And so how do people prepare for that when you're retired and the world and the merry-go-round keeps spinning?
Right. I find it fascinating. I've been doing some research on both the history of retirement going back, you know, to the beginning of, you know, swapping out oil for, you know, time spent in your retirement years, all the way through, you know, the future vision of, you know, what is this world going to look like when people can actually live because of, you know, healthcare advances to their 120th birthday, and what's it going to look like when we're all flying around in our personal vehicles that we don't have to drive anymore? So it's a world that, I guess, just like our grandparents couldn't imagine the world we live in today, we're having a hard time visualizing how that could impact both our financial future as well as just the way we live our lives. So I would imagine that if the changes occur as we're seeing them, that we may really have to rethink retirement, which may not even exist, I would think, in a future generation, because life won't be as backbreaking and as arduous as it is now, you know, where we have to commute on the beltway to get to work and we have to, you know, put in our 10-hour days. You may not have to work as long to be as productive. You might be willing to work later into life because you enjoy what you do and it's not as hard to do. It's more mentally challenging. So I'm excited. I hope I live long enough to see that future world and see exactly what's going to unfold as time goes by.
Yes, I do know someone, a couple, that are both turned 80 in the past year. The woman says she's going for 100.
Yeah, there's really a lot more chance of that happening today than before. And the other thing that's kind of cool about the future and the medical advances that they could actually wipe out being disabled, you know, with prosthetic limbs and your brain being able to feel your prosthetic legs so that you can actually walk again. And
artificial people driving around in self-driving cars, you wouldn't know who's dead from alive at some point. Tammy Flanagan is Senior Benefits Director at the National Institute of Transition Planning and a federal retirement expert. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tom.